Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
He's unpredictable. He's relentless. He's fearless. He's smart. He's a jerk. Oh, man, what a jerk. How would you describe Kirk Minahan? Combustible. Unpredictable. Venomous. Testy. Obnoxious. Selfish. Polarizing. Pompous.
Enough about me. Let's get to the show.
It's Kirk Minahan's Enough About Me.
You know, there's been a million stories and documentaries and books written about the death of Len Bias and what happened after that. And that's interesting for sure, as we've reached, unbelievably, 30 years. But I'm more intrigued, I think, now by the process of how the guy was drafted, how the Celtics wound up with Len Bias at the number two pick. You don't read a lot about that. You don't think there's much mystery, but there is a little bit of it. And we brought Jan Volkan, who was a general manager of the Celtics at the time, and he talked to me about the entire process. You know, Brad Doherty, how they wound up with the pick, the trade of Gerald Henderson, the whole thing. A pretty good conversation with Jan Volkan about the drafting of Len Bias. Were you looking to trade Gerald Henderson?
No, not initially. I mean, there was no expectation or interest in trading him until we got an offer. That came shortly after.
You had just signed him, right?
Shortly after we re-signed him, maybe 5 days after we re-signed him, I got a call from another general manager I know quite well who was in the Eastern Conference, who initially was calling to find out what the deal was. What did we sign him for? And when I told him, and that's all available, I mean, there were no confidences being divulged because that information in the era of the salary cap was available, but we talked. He said, "Gee," he said, "that's a pretty good deal. You guys did okay. Look, I'm looking at your team, and I see how Danny's playing, and you know, DJ's going to be your number one guy, and I'm wondering, would you guys take a first for him?" And I said, "Well, you know what? Let's think about that." And we went back and we turned them down, but we, because we didn't want them. Well, actually, I'm going to say we turned them down later. We didn't really want to.
In conference.
We didn't want to put them in conference, no. And it was a pretty good team that we were going to. So if we were to get a first round pick for them in that context, it would have been considerably less valuable than what we ultimately did.
When you say we, is we, you, Red, Casey Jones, and anybody? Jimmy Rogers is part of that process as well.
Sure.
Right.
What followed after the initial call was a conference call with the four of us.
Right.
In which we confirmed what I was saying. What was my conclusion was that let's look elsewhere, and if we could still do that, but we didn't want to, if we could help it, make a conference team better.
Right.
And by the same token, it was a team that was good enough that the pick wouldn't be stellar. So we looked through the Western Conference and made some judgments about where teams were going to be in a year or two. And those are the teams that we went and talked to.
So when did the Seattle conversation start?
Probably that afternoon.
Right.
Day, very shortly thereafter. I think we signed him on a Thursday or Friday.
Mm-hmm.
He played in exhibition games in Texas maybe on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And I believe I got this call on Monday. And we ultimately did the deal on a Tuesday the next day. So it was very quick.
Did they offer you
turnaround?
Did they offer you a pick that year? What was the offer? Was the offer – because the pick was not – that year.
No, it was not.
Right.
I don't like to – because it's not public knowledge, and I don't want to embarrass anybody. I'm not going to tell you the name of the other Western Coast Conference team. But we did have a conversation with another Western Conference team who offered us a first round pick in '86. This was in the fall of '84.
Right.
So the next pick would have been
'85.
Mm-hmm. They offered us a pick in '86, but that pick was. Lottery protected. That was the very first time I had experienced that request from another team.
Right. That term was not
No, the lottery was new. It was only in its second year.
Right.
And lottery protection, which makes perfect sense to all of us now, was not necessarily, had never been part of a deal that I had discussed. And I can't recall if it ever was. But this was a forward-thinking general manager who put a limitation on it. And we thought about it, and I talked to the general manager for Seattle, Les Haubegger,
mm-hmm.
and he came back with an 87 pick, but no lottery protection, which isn't a knock on him. That's the way it was mm-hmm. generally being done at that point. And I told him that I really wanted an 86 pick, and we had an offer for an 86 pick, which was legitimate. And I said, can you do that? And he said, no. I said, well, have you talked to the owner of Seattle? I'm trying to
his estimate. Name.
Barry Ackerley.
Right, okay, good.
And have you talked to Barry? And he said, no, not about an 86.
86.
And I said, no, we didn't discuss it, but I don't want to do that. I said, well, I can understand that. Maybe what you should do is run it by Barry, because I know in my case I wouldn't want to have to explain why I lost a player. Because we didn't respond to their counteroffer. And he said, okay. And that's how the deal came about. He talked to Barry, and Barry said, okay, we'll do that. We'll accelerate it 1 year.
Anderson was a good player, but you know, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe 30 years has changed the cloud of my judgment, but I don't think of him as that kind of player. Am I doing him a disservice historically?
Well, Gerald was a very good player.
Yeah.
And he was a starter on a championship team, and Henderson stole the ball.
Sure, you don't win the title in 84 without that, right? You're down 2-0.
Exactly, exactly. It didn't absolutely doom us,
but
we would have been in a very difficult situation.
But Andrews is a better player at that point.
Well, what we learned in training camp when Gerald was not yet signed, and so not in camp, mm-hmm. was that we felt that Danny played better as a starter than he did coming off the bench, and he played better than Gerald as a starter coming off the bench. So he probably would stay there, and Gerald would probably be the third guard, which isn't so terrible.
Right.
Underplaying it, would have been a good three guard rotation.
Excellent, yeah.
It was a good three guard rotation the year before, except that the who started and who was going to be coming off the bench would have been different. But Gerald was a very good player, and we never said otherwise. I think what happened to the pick in terms of the lottery probably juxtaposed against Gerald. Poorly. That is,
right.
I think Gerald
was the 25th pick. It'd be a different conversation.
Or the 15th pick.
Right. Right.
It would have, or even at the bottom of the lottery, maybe. Is
sure.
But at the where it came in out of the lottery as a second pick, I think it did a disservice to Gerald's to retrospectively looking at Gerald's worth.
I'm curious. So you're the general manager at the time, right?
Correct.
At the time of this trade, what in terms of the power structure, is Red still have complete? Yes, no, veto power on everything. What is the where is he at this point?
Let me skip ahead a year.
Okay.
Okay. We had just won the 86 championship, and I think we won it on a Sunday.
You did. I was there. Yeah.
The draft was 10 days later.
Right.
On a Tuesday.
Right.
And I did a live shot interview with I think it was Bob Lobel
mm-hmm.
on Channel 4. On the 6 o'clock news on Friday, and essentially the call went like this from Bob. He said, "You guys just won a championship. We got the draft in on Tuesday, and are you guys going to be ready for that?" And I said, "Bob, of course we are. Not only can we multitask. I mean, the draft we're working on next year's draft now. I mean, we're
right.
You know, you're constantly. And this was in an era when players." Went primarily 4 years, but some only 3 years, but very few
mm-hmm.
at that point were coming out earlier than that, and
uh-huh.
certainly very even fewer out of high school. So you were accumulating a database on players based on 4 years worth of analysis. So I said, I said, he said, well, what's going to happen this weekend? I said, well, we met all week going over the possibilities and realize we have the second pick in the draft, so it kind of narrows down.
Yep.
We have no meeting scheduled this weekend. People, our staff, Ed Badger was our head scout.
Scout, yeah.
And Rick Weitzman was mm-hmm. a scout. And, people that we had great confidence in who participated in all of these meetings. And we said, we're not going to have any meetings on the weekend. We're going to... we're going to let everybody look at film as they want, look through the scouting reports as they want.
And I'm sorry, this is the weekend after you win the title.
Yes, this is Saturday.
Before the draft.
Saturday, Sunday, after we had won the previous
right,
Sunday.
Right, right.
I said, we're going to reconvene on Monday, and we'll go over the data, and we'll now reach a consensus on who we want to draft, and that's the guy we'll draft. And that's what I said. It's live.
We told Bo Bell, right?
Yeah. And in the back of my head, I'm saying... Who are you kidding?
Right.
And I said, I kind of blurted out, and I said, well, unless, of course, Red wants to draft somebody else, in which case, that's the guy we'll draft.
Right.
So, of course, Red was, how could you not have the best there ever was fully involved?
Was he one
to
of
the degree that you possibly could?
Was he the kind of guy, though, that wanted you to disagree with him? Did he encourage open dialogue?
You wouldn't think so by the way he responded to it.
Right.
But yes. Yes, he did. I mean, Red understood that one person can't do all of this stuff.
Right.
He just can't. And he was very good at letting people do their jobs
mm-hmm.
and then listen to what they had to say. Now, he may disagree, and he may disagree in a way that, and I'll say it differently, he may disagree, and he may actually be disagreeable mm-hmm. in disagreeing, but it wasn't. It was fine. Everybody understood that, and there were very few bruised egos as a result.
You're looking at this team, 40-1 at home, and counting the playoffs, lost one game at home. Portland. I was at that game too.
Yeah. We had a couple of games where we played against really quality teams, shorthanded.
Right.
That we won.
Wow.
And that game, Portland was not particularly good, and I think we had our people.
Yeah, it was just a random day of the week. I think 79-3 over those two seasons at home, the two regular seasons. I think they get one loss and two losses.
I know we went more than 41 games without a loss.
Right. I think almost a calendar year, right? But I think the team's the best team ever. You're 67-15. So you're focusing on that as a GM, obviously, and trying to win the title. But I have to think that every morning you're waking up and saying, what did Seattle do last night on the West Coast, right?
Absolutely.
And at what point do you start saying...
Well, we didn't even wait till the morning.
Well, that night, right. That night. So at what point do you say, holy shit, we are not... This team is one of the great teams ever. Bird, by the way, is only like 29 at this point. All these guys are in their prime, and you're thinking, we might have a chance to add a serious guy to this list. It must have been, pretty early in that season, you knew Seattle wasn't going to be a good team.
Well, Seattle wasn't as bad as you might think in retrospect. They didn't make it, but they would have qualified for
today.
The playoffs. Oh, no, in our conference, they would have qualified.
Oh,
for
really?
The playoffs.
Oh, that's the Bulls were.
If you go, and I don't remember how close it would.
But you're right.
But
that Bulls team only won what? Like 33 games. You're right. That's true.
So it was not a bad team. It just happened to be in a conference where it was really hard to make the playoffs, and they. Where they didn't have their pick, they certainly weren't tanking.
That's true. That's true.
I don't know when it was. The year, what year was it? Well, the year before. We've got 2 years that are involved here,
right?
Because the pick is
'86.
The pick is '86.
'85, '86.
Right. Gerald came back and played against us in '84, '85.
Right.
And I remember, as a lot of other people do, and I remember it very differently than other people, when that game was over and they beat us in the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about our record in the Garden. They were a loss in the Garden for us.
In 84-85, yeah.
84-85, but still, we were still putting up numbers.
Oh, yeah, even the finals that year, yeah.
We were still,
yeah.
And the year before. So we still had a pretty pretty good home record. And they had enough of a lead that, I don't know what it was, 7-8 points, that the last possession they had, nobody was fouling them. And Gerald dribbled out the clock high over the logo.
Right.
Essentially.
Right.
And when it was over, he slammed that ball on the onto the logo. It went high above his head. And I got asked about that right after the right after the game. Was I annoyed by that? How did I feel about that? And was that insulting? And I guess I had a different look on it. My view is, why would you ever want to be traded away from this team? I mean, I don't blame him for being upset, and he wasn't traded because he did anything wrong.
Right.
He just happened to have been able to get us something that we thought was made sense under the circumstances.
And it's funny, I talked to him about this for this.
Yeah.
And he's not bitter is not the right word, but you definitely get the sense, whatever it is, 30 years later, or 20, whether we traded 28 years later, it hurt him for that exact reason. He knew he was in the middle of something really special. He said, it just wasn't the same in Seattle. It just wasn't the same.
Yeah,
and he had a good career. He played, you know, yeah. He played with Philly, and he bounced around. But he had a pretty good career. He played over 10 years.
Well, and he came. He was he had a lot to prove, or so he felt. I think he was undrafted, Virginia Commonwealth.
Yep.
And we signed him as a free agent, and he earned a spot on our team. I mean, that's. That was a pretty good team. That was a long shot to make the team when he did. And he earned the playing time that he got, and he delivered.
So you know that you're going to be a pretty good pick. You go through the whole lottery process. Red is there. Pat Williams is there. You get the second pick in the draft, which is a surprise. You know, so when the smoke's cleared, you know you have the second pick. For the first time, you guys sit around, whether it's the four of you guys you mentioned before, a couple of scouts as well. Are you right away targeting bias, or do you have four or five players that you're looking at?
Well, we obviously only needed to select. Is there a
pool of guys you're looking at potentially?
The players that stood head and shoulders in our view above the rest were Len Bias and
Doherty. Yeah.
Doherty. If we had had the number one pick, I feel pretty confident we would have taken Bias, despite Doherty being there. But we would not have been unhappy had he dropped to us.
Mm-hmm.
So either one of them were positive things for us. Bias was more of in our view, a better transitional player for us to go from one era to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were looking for in that. We had a nucleus of players who were all about the same age, who were in the prime of their careers, but they weren't, you know, they were presumably going to retire in close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed to get a transcendent player, if we could, to pick it up at that point. And we also viewed at that particular point in time, we didn't know that we were going to have issues with Bill Walton, not with him, but with his health.
Well, he must have had some suspicion.
That particular point. He had played
80 games that year.
He played 80 out of 82 games.
But given his history, he would have
played in the other two if they were playoff
right.
games.
But given his history, he must have had some apprehension.
Well, I can't. No.
Right.
I wouldn't say that we were overly confident.
Right.
But there was no indication that we were going to he wasn't going to play.
He was effectively done at that point.
Yeah, there was no reason to know that. And the bias skill set was important to that team at that time. So we thought he was going to be a contributor right away, also, as compared to Doherty, who probably would not contribute for a little while.
At what point do you bring Bias in? Does he come to you guys? Do you go down to him before drafting him?
Well, we knew him for a long time.
Knew him, right?
We knew him for a long time. He had been at Reds camp for 2 years prior,
mm-hmm.
and you would watch the workouts because that's what Red did with his counselors.
Sure,
he worked them out. He found out what they could and couldn't do, and we found out we learned a lot about him. In terms of what he could do and what he couldn't do, which was very little.
Who was he?
Well, this is what was written on an early scouting report that maybe not so early it has to be put in context, recognizing that Michael Jordan was not yet the Michael Jordan we all know.
I mean, we obviously knew at that point. He had scored 63 points. We knew he was going to be great, but he wasn't what he is
now.
Not
on the scouting report that I'm talking about.
Okay,
so it's probably in 85.
Okay, I got you.
85, 86. But it's before 63
points. Okay, I got you.
The scouting report described him as Michael Jordan with a better outside jump shot, doesn't go to the basket quite as well.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And you know, you go back, you talk to Mike Krzyzewski, and he'll tell you that, and I can't think of who the other player would be, but one of the two best players he saw in college ever were
I think the other one he said is David Thompson.
Well, it might actually be.
Oh, that's Wilbon. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh God, I have to think about it. But I was only focused on the fact that Bias was one.
Right.
Michael Jordan.
Bias and Jordan.
I think it was
that
Bias
makes sense.
And Jordan.
That would
I think
make
it was
sense.
Bias and Jordan.
Right.
And we knew certain things about his game. He was a mean player. He wasn't just a skilled player. He was a mean competitor, and. He brought his own chip on his shoulder. You didn't need to motivate him particularly, and he put in these pickup games that were played at camp. You
right.
could see that. It's interesting that we had he was there, and so was Reggie Lewis.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Picked the year later.
Right, and he was picked the year later, and we learned a lot about Reggie, who was playing at that point. He was playing. He was a forward. He was a 4-3 at Northeastern, and. We realized seeing him play.
Who didn't play angry?
No, he did not.
You know, it'd be
no,
an interesting
not.
Contrast. You know, he was a very level.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, a super player, obviously, but the difference.
Well, very competitive in a quiet way. You know what? He
yeah.
was a killer, too.
You
yeah,
think?
He was a killer, too, but in a very quiet way.
So, Bias, so there was no, he didn't come to you, you didn't go to him before the draft?
Oh, no, we brought him in.
Right.
We brought a bunch in. And,
well, we'll start with Bias. So you bring him in.
Yeah.
Do you give him a drug test?
We did.
And that was that
we violated the
was that against
we violated the collective bargaining rules. Frankly, without thinking, I pride myself in having understood the collective bargaining agreement quite well, and that was one of the things that I brought one of the skills that I brought
right.
to the table. We blew that, but we did. We
he passed it.
Oh yeah.
Was there any whispers?
No. Nothing. We did background checks. Nothing.
Was that back then? Was the background checks as extensive, say, as it would be today? What was the
well,
process?
I would suspect that they got better. They got more extensive the next year.
That's probably true.
But it was fairly extensive.
Right.
And
nothing.
Nothing.
Right.
Nothing. And we also the NBA did theirs also over time, and while they were not permitted to share those results with us, we got a sense of what was going on, he was clean in that respect. He was clean as a whistle.
Doherty came in.
Doherty did not come in. Dean Smith wouldn't let him come.
Why not?
Because we were of all the teams in that draft, we were capped. And he didn't see where the money was going to come. And I mean, I had a conversation with him, which was surprising to me that he would take this stance, but he would not allow him to come in.
So strange back then that, you know, a college basketball coach wielded that kind of power. He would say, Brad Doherty can't. You never had any conversation. So Doherty was
no, across. No, we didn't. We weren't permitted to. And when a player has an agent,
right.
You're not. You're
well, how about
talk
I mean, this is the rest of the crew is. Pretty infamous in that draft. Now you start talking about
there.
That. Did who else came in? Washburn?
No, we didn't bring Washburn in. I think the only other player we brought in was William Bedford.
And how was that process?
Not so good.
No,
he couldn't pee in a cup.
He could
we
not.
Tried we tried to drug test him, and he couldn't provide a sample.
He did not want to provide a sample.
Which is euphemistically,
red flag.
He did not want to. Yeah.
So he was out.
He was out. There might have been a player or two that we brought in, but really, as I said, we only needed two.
So at that point, you, after this whole process, after meeting with Bias and Bedford and all these other guys, you were pretty confident that you know you guys would have been thrilled with you had taken Doherty, but you guys were going to be thrilled with Bias, right?
We would have preferred Bias.
Right. You wanted Bias.
Right. Let me step back.
Yeah.
He came in and we had a nice conversation with him. It might not be, it wasn't a formal interview. We had known him. It wasn't.
Right. And at what point before the draft was this?
Oh,
how far?
2 or 3 weeks.
Probably. Okay. Yeah.
Maybe even less.
Right.
I do remember, and this was reported in USA Today, I don't know if I walked him out or whether it's all the way to the cab to the airport or we probably had somebody driving him, but or if this was in our office. I can't remember the where, but I remember the what. And that was simply when I went to say goodbye. I said, good to see you. You know, hope we'll see you on draft day. And he says, please, please draft me. This was his goal. He wanted to be here. He didn't want to be drafted by, at that point, it was Philadelphia. They traded it the night before the draft. But he clearly wanted to be here.
And he would have fit in sixth, seventh guy, provided Walt was healthy, which you thought at the time would have come in. And
we would have found a spot for him. We as it turns out, there were a number of things that happened that confirmed that we would have used him. We lost Scott Wedman for the year about 10 games into the season, maybe
right.
less.
Right.
And people forget Scott Wedman and forget how good he was.
Great shooter, too.
Great shooter. A pretty good defender.
Yeah. He's a good player. Really
he was
player.
A very good player, but he was playing in the shadow of Larry Bird.
Right.
And didn't get the recognition. But when we lost him in 86, 87, we had nobody to fill that role. And Bias would have done that.
Did you get the sense at that point, just in the NBA in general, 83, 84, 85, 86, that drugs were all over the place? Would that be an accurate representation?
No, in fact, I think it had changed.
Because the late 70s, it was...
It had changed dramatically since the late 70s, and when it was a player initiative that there be drug testing.
Right.
Players who were clean were sick and tired of being right. lumped together with players who weren't, and they right. wanted to change that. So I think it would change quite a bit. I do think there are other things, though, that... would be unacceptable now. When we look back at that particular point in time, we do so through the eyes of someone in 2016.
Sure.
And that's not, it doesn't give you a clear picture. And the characterization of players using recreational drugs was not a particularly worrisome finding. At that point in time, teams were okay with that. They didn't think that was a problem. They didn't like it particularly, but if the player was good enough, they were going to overlook it, which is probably what happened in that draft. It wasn't what we did,
right?
Because we did not have that information, and after the subpoena power of a grand jury couldn't figure out whether or not there had been prior use. So we weren't in that situation, but a number of other teams did select players that they knew had recreational drug use in their past. That changed almost immediately after Bias died.
Did you get the sense at the time when they had the pick that Philadelphia was going to take Doherty, or did you think they were going to move the pick? Were you surprised when the trade happened?
We were surprised, Our sense was that they were going to take Doherty.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know why they made the trade. I've heard Pat talk about it, I still don't quite.
Well, you said it's financially motivated.
It may be that Dean Smith said right. he's not going there either. I don't know. Maybe so.
But that was another really good team that had a. First pick
yes.
in the draft. I mean, that team was loaded.
We were better than they were.
No, I know, but that was. But yeah. for that team, that they still had Moses Malone. They had a young Barkley.
I can't even remember who was on that.
Yeah,
team,
but I mean, you know, they had some talented guys at the first pick in the draft.
Yeah,
and they didn't get much back for it,
as it turns out.
Right, but yes, that's true.
I mean, it didn't seem wildly unfair at the
but
time.
But given that you wanted Bias, you would have taken Bias first. Since you had the sense that Philly was going to take Doherty, when they then traded to Cleveland, it was a thought, oh, no, you know, they might take Bias?
Yeah, absolutely. And when we, when I say we, I was in the room, but Red called Harry Weltman, who was then the general manager, at least. He may not have been the general manager, he may not have been president.
Right.
And Wayne Embry, I think, had been hired as general manager, but he was coming from Indiana, so he wasn't permitted to be part of the
right
of their process until after the draft. So I don't know what part Wayne may have played or may not have. Wayne, I have great respect for Wayne. He's been a friend a long time, but the conversation was with Harry Weltman, And I remember Harry, Red confirming, Harry, I agree with you. If that was my pick, that's who I'd take. Okay. I'd have had a harder time maybe saying that than Red did. When Red was done and the conversation was over, we both looked at each other and said, well, hope that worked. And it did.
Did you get the sense that the other guys around the league thought that Red was bullshitting them, though? I mean, at some point they must have wised up to it, right?
I think there was always great trepidation, and I think it's why I might have had more success in some context than Red did, because I was it's hard to look at me now and say it this way, but I was the kid,
right?
You know, but I did have one interesting exposure to that, to the way in which Red was perceived by others. I had made an offer to another team to trade a general manager I know well and I respect, and what we were doing is offering a player who was in the last year of his contract that we were upfront about it. He viewed himself as a starter and was looking for starter money, and he was a great backup for us, but that was it. And we were offering it to them to them for a player who was injured and not likely to play until the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. And he was also going to be a free agent, and they didn't know whether they were going to want to resign him or not resign him. It was a perfect opportunity for two teams to try out players and without a lot of risk.
Right.
And the general manager said, sounds really good to me. Let me check with the coach. And I'm just not using names here, not to mm-hmm. protect the innocent, I guess, or maybe to protect the guilty, maybe. And it came back to me. Coach says it's good. We're good. I just have to tell the owner. I can't reach him. So let's do it first thing in the morning. How about 10 o'clock? I said, fine. This was in the period of time prior to a draft. Mm-hmm. And we were in the office very early. And 10 o'clock came and went, and I totally forgot about it. We had a break at about 11 o'clock. And I said, has so-and-so called? Nope. Let me call him. I called him. I said, we got to set up a conference call. He said, no, unfortunately, can't. I said, why is that? He said, can't do the deal. I said, why not? He said, the owner said, if Red wants to do this deal, I don't. And I said, would you believe that Red doesn't know anything about this? He said, not for a minute. Okay. So we didn't do the deal.
Do you guys never looked at Chuck Person?
Well, I mean, it doesn't disparage his talent.
He was picked fourth.
The guy we wanted was biased.
Tarpley, no?
No. When you say did we look at them, we evaluated all of them.
Right.
But we didn't, our view was we've got the second pick, we need two players, we got two players.
Was there ever any offers for the pick? Was there any trade discussion around
pick? I don't recall fielding any offers for the pick.
Yeah. Yeah. So then draft day happens. So now you're confident Cleveland's going to take Doherty. They do. You take Bias. You do. And then you're just sort of thinking, you know, we're not all set, because I'm sure you never think that you're all set, but you're thinking, wow, you know, we have basically, via good trade, have fallen into this guy, and we have what you would think was a foundational player for the next decade, right, at the
Correct.
Time?
Yeah. And Larry did too. I mean, Larry was really excited because he could see him playing right then and there and prolonging Larry's career.
And you think of him as a – was he a three? Was he a
– so 3-4.
He could play a four as well?
Yeah.
So he could spot Bird and McHale potentially?
Probably.
And KC, who was not a huge fan
– That's an issue of rookies. Is that where you're going?
Well, I remember with Reggie Lewis, it was he would just bury guys.
Yeah.
Was that a conversation? I guess you hadn't had to have it quite at that point.
I don't think it would have been an issue. For one thing, the way that the injuries
right.
that came down, we had an injury to Walton played right. very few games.
Right, Wedman, as you said.
Wedman was out. McHale got hurt late in the season.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been hard not to play him. He ended up playing guys that we brought in. Darren Day, Connor
yep.
Henry,
yep.
And so forth. Who while they were NBA players and they could
right.
have a role, weren't Len Bias.
Well, the '87 team was sort of almost historically decimated in the second half of the season.
It was.
Between, you know, all the injuries between Walton and McHale and stuff. You're right. I guess he would have played. So then, I guess, you know, when do you find out that he had died?
Well, we'll come back a little.
Sure.
Bit. The draft was in New York,
mm-hmm.
and he immediately came up. He was there.
Right.
Immediately came up to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Came into the office. He met with the media, and mm-hmm. and he also went out to Reebok maybe the next day.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they were they reached an agreement, or they already had an agreement, but he went there, and so that would be Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm not sure if it was he went back Wednesday night, I think.
Okay.
So it would be Thursday morning. I got a call about 6 o'clock from a TV producer. Who said, I'm really sorry to call, and this sounds like a really cruel joke, but we have word that Len Bias has collapsed from a heart attack. So you're kidding. No, I said, I can't imagine that. But I'm up. That's got me thinking. He calls back, same producer calls back a couple of minutes later, and he said, just wanted you to know, I called his agent. His agent was Lee Fentress, who I'd known quite a while, and he said, and he took the call, and then he slammed the phone and hung up on me. So you're kidding. So I called Lee, and Lee said, well, it's true. There is that he has been rushed to the hospital. I don't know anything more than that. So now I start making my calls. I call Red. Red knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
I called Alan Cohen and I called Don Gast, and I can't remember what order any of them. Probably Red first. That's my inclination. And they didn't know obviously anything about it. Well, not obviously, but they didn't know anything about it. And we talked, and they were very interesting. These were nice people. They both expressed real concern, not in a basketball sense. And, I mean, there was nothing about that. I really got the sense that they were worried for him. I said, I don't know any more than that. I called Red back, and Red, it was in an intervening period, maybe 15 minutes. Red knew he had died. It wasn't out. There was no media report to it yet. And he got that from Lefty Drizel. At least I'm assuming that's what he did. He mm-hmm. got it from Lefty Drizel. And there I was stunned, absolutely stunned. It's no better way to describe it.
It's yeah. It must be, you know. My natural reaction would be you give it zero thought from a basketball perspective for a long time, right? I mean,
you don't think of your players dying,
right?
It's just not something you think about,
right? And then you know all the fallout. I mean, when do you start hearing about drugs that day?
No. Did not hear about that.
After?
No, it was a short period of time, but not that short.
Mm-hmm.
We had and in retrospect, it looks very insensitive, but we had a travel company had set up a cruise for a lot of people to go with some members of the Celtics,
mm-hmm.
and it was a commitment that we had. And that was to leave on, I think, Saturday. So we've got one intervening day. And we went. And while I was, while we were at sea, we got a cablegram that came
right.
with the results of the autopsy implicating cocaine in his death. And that was, from my perspective, the first I had heard of it. Now, I had been insulated. I was not easily reached at that mm-hmm. particular point in time. So that's how I heard
it. And then shock all over again, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Although I will say that I was still numb, and I almost didn't care why.
Right.
I just knew what. That was the right then and there. That was the most significant issue for me.
And it's hard to, you know— I feel like Bias gets better and better every year.
As a player? I mean, his quality of his play?
If that makes sense. You know, now all of a sudden, you know, it's almost assumed that he was going to be one of these all-time great players. I'm not sure that's fair, but
Well, I'm not sure who that's unfair to.
Well, I should say I don't know if that's legitimate or not. I wonder, you know, sometimes history sort of, you know, moves it that way. But are you convinced that this was going to be a great player, a Hall of Fame talent?
We were convinced at the time.
Yeah.
That's all I can, you know, the only reference that I can give you. Have we been wrong before? Sure. Is it an exact science? Absolutely not. But there are certain things that you think you can count on. We had known him for long enough to see his play over a period of time. I do think that the drafting players, drug issues aside, mm-hmm. the drafting players in that era was easier than it is now. I'll rephrase that. Evaluation of players at that point was an easier thing to do.
More of a sample size?
A whole bunch of things. Bigger sample size. They're playing against the best players are seniors, mm-hmm. playing against seniors. And they're making a jump, one jump up to the next level. Now you've got the best players are all freshmen, virtually.
Yeah.
They get to play 1 year. They had only one year of sample size.
Or some guy in Croatia who you don't know, you know, they have that too.
Well, that's true, and that's a different issue. You've got right. You might have a larger sample size, but you don't have, but you can't, it's grading the competition
right.
is harder. But grading the competition now is hard. Because they're younger, the better players are younger, and they're not as good. Their game isn't as refined as the seniors that were the better players in 1986. Mm-hmm. So you did get an opportunity to evaluate them maybe a little more carefully.
Right.
And that's where Bias was. He was a senior. He was playing against seniors, and he, for the most part, and he stood head and shoulders. He did a lot of things. His skill set was outstanding, and he had size. He was a legitimate 6'8". He was strong. He was mean. You know, you can gauge right. mean. He's going to be mean, regardless. And I mean that in a very very positive sense.
Sure.
He was a deep range jump shooter. Jump maker, if you mm-hmm. jump shot maker.
Right.
He was a very good outside shooter, and he was very good around the basket. So could he not have been as good as we thought? Absolutely, but I would say that would be the probabilities were that he was going to be a very good player.
How did the death affect Red?
That's a real tough thing to say. I don't know. I mean, it certainly affected Lefty Drizel.
Mm-hmm.
And who lost his job, essentially. Mm-hmm. Red was a good friend of Lefty's. We obviously had put a lot of faith and hope into this draft. We still thought... I had made a statement at the time that turned out to be wrong, and I said, you know, not in a callous way, but competitively, his death isn't going to be felt for a little while. Well, I was wrong. It was felt right away, because he right. would have played right away, and we needed him to play right away. So, or nearly right away. But Red had all those feelings. I don't know that it changed him particularly. He's a tough-minded guy, but we were all disappointed.
How about affected? Let's play devil's advocate and say that Cleveland decides to take Bias first, and you take Doherty second. My guess is he would have backed up Parrish for a few years. Parrish would have retired, and Doherty would have gone on to have a really career with the Celtics. Is that a reasonable?
I think that's a reasonable assumption. And if you look at that season where Walton couldn't play,
he would have played a lot.
He would have gotten time.
Right. The knock on him going into that draft was he was soft.
Right.
He wasn't. No, he looked soft.
He did.
If that makes sense. He was kind of doughy in college.
And traditionally, North Carolina players were hard to evaluate. I don't know why, but
because of the system.
As I said, I don't know why.
Right.
they had a lot of players. One of the things I think that maybe contributed to that is they had a lot of players of equal high-level players, but of equal ability. Mm-hmm. So they didn't stand out So you look at it. You look at the Maryland team, and bias stood out.
Right.
But you had, I don't know, it was Worthy there then, and you had
Worthy, but they had Perkins and Jordan and Worthy and Doherty, and I mean, this was
there
all,
was a lot. There was a, there were a lot of quality players, and it was a system that was not a. You know, didn't focus on one individual. Michael Jordan being an example, great player. Ultimately, the best of all time in many people's eyes. Mm-hmm. But as a college player, he was just a really good college player.
Right.
But he wasn't. You couldn't have forecast his career.
Did you guys think that Doherty was soft heading into that draft?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Right. My point is why was it bias over Doherty?
Well. I think that played a role. I think we were also looking, as I said, to the skill set that he brought. While there was much more of an emphasis on the center position than there is now, this was a player of unusual skills.
Right. Okay, we're good.
All right.
Appreciate it.
I am really impressed that you didn't have one note.
This error is my.
You didn't have one note, and we went from question to question absolutely seamlessly, even though we may have gone different directions. Very impressed.
Thanks.
I like that.
All right. Thanks, as always, for listening to the Enough About Me podcast. If you want more podcasts like this with guests like Artie Lang, who else is going to have Artie Lang and fucking Bob Ryan on the same podcast, or David Portnoy and John Tomasi? If you want to listen to podcasts like this, you go to iTunes, Stitcher, you go to WEI.com, you go to the mobile app. When you go to iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review, and subscribe. That's going to help us out a lot. If you want more of these, leave a rating, leave a review, and subscribe. Make sure you do that for me. That is a command. Now do it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.